Scare the cat.
Oh, sorry, Ziggy.
It scares him every time.
Oh.
He's like, loud noise, what?
Why have you done this loud noise? I really wish you would not do that loud noise.
The cat has trust issues now.
Got my hair cut, got to have my usual therapy session with my hairdresser. It's just like, let me tell you about everything that's happened in the last month or so.
Cause who
doggy? My brother Donnie's dead. My daddy Donnie's dead.
My brother Mike's dead. My daddy Donnie's dead.
The shotgun thing.
What a show of, like, nothing but severe hits and severe misses in comedy. Like,
I mean, that's anti-humor in general, is, like, it's a lot of it tends to just kind of be, you know, by virtue of being anti-comedy, not actually funny, but more just funny in how fucking awkward it is.
Shrimp?
What?
Shrimp?
What?
Shrimp?
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 Shrimp.
And the house Chardonnay for the gentleman.
That's very, like, I don't think that's funny.
Watch, Bree, you may not be ready for it, but you're gonna love it in, like, a year when Bridget and I have done it so much that, like, it's circled around just like the fucking, the singing bit. I can't remember.
Bang, bang, rob that bank, put him in jail, put him in jail.
I want to drive rocket ship.
Like, only the payoff.
Oh no, choo-choo train, not rocket ship.
Yeah, only the payoff bit is really funny to me.
When Josh Groban is singing those songs.
Yeah, the whole just, like, this kid who can't sing, who's gross and greasy for some reason. Like, I don't know, man.
Died in a tragic car accident.
Happens to the best of us.
Anyways. I guess we get started now. Hi, everyone!
Hey, what's up?
What reviews connected by cast or crew deciding the next film, that's the gist. Put it on the list.
We are Put It On The List,
hell,
and we
yeah.
Have officially entered year two.
Two.
New
two,
year,
two,
new
two.
Us.
Hell yeah.
New year, new us, new rotation. We're gonna have to get used to a new rhythm of saying our names, because first up in the rotation
is Donald, Goofy, Sora.
It's always that order. It's always Donald, Goofy, and Sora.
Wait, no, I think it's Sora, Donald, Goofy.
Mickey, you gotta
damn
open
it.
The door to darkness. Oh, yeah.
Did somebody say door to darkness?
Anyways, the person who just did some kind of Mickey Mouse impersonation is the first one in the rotation.
And that's
introduce
why we're
going
to watch Down and Out with Donald Duck, the documentary, where he uses a shotgun to shoot it at the audience and try to kill Mickey.
Say
Can
your
you
name.
Just
fucking say your name. And then the next one in the rotation will be...
I have had Kingdom Hearts Dream Drop Distance downloaded to my very cool 3DS for like a year. I need to play that at some point. I'm Evie.
Hold on. Before we continue the introductions, have you played any of the Kingdom Hearts games besides that?
Yeah. I played the first two.
Okay, for
is
sure.
It,
I didn't know you...
Is it the 3DS version or the HD version?
It's the 3DS version because it's on 3DS, Bridget.
I'm Bree, the troublemaking scamp.
Yes, you're number three in the rotation.
The Dream
Drop
Distance stands for 3D, get it?
Yeah, yes, it's 3Ds.
3Ds
nuts.
Oh, the height of comedy. We're starting off strong.
I may
this
have
season.
Beaten Evie to the punch on that one, but I am last in the rotation. I'm Jay. However,
again, welcome to Put It On The List. Season two.
However, before we start the rotation proper, in our year one finale, stop doing the echo bit. In our year one finale, we decided what would be the Wheels movie of choice. We all put a movie, us four and our viewers slash listeners, put a movie on a wheel. We spun that wheel and we ended up with The Big Lebowski.
Hell yeah.
Which is what we're... That's the Wheels choice. Mm-hmm. I guess that's going to be the rotation now, is we have the Wheels choice first up, and then we start the rotation proper.
You know, just to throw a little extra inhuman element of chaos into it. Yeah. I love that.
You got to pull the cord before you start the engine.
Yeah.
Goose ourselves up a little bit before we get started.
So I'm going to get... your movies for connecting, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, you'll be connecting off of me.
Evie will be the same. Evie is still stuck with me.
I don't
still
see
stuck
way.
In hell, yeah. Look for English dubs. Just work your way out. Yeah. It'll...
Godspeed.
Well, she'll have plenty of options for what I'm picking.
It is actually later. Like finding a good movie has never actually been a problem for me.
That's fair.
You literally crawled your way, like, fucking clawed through the Burberry bushes, whatever. I don't know the visual metaphor I'm trying to paint here, out of X-1999 to Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah, like one of the voice actors in X, if you were not listening or have forgotten, one of the voice actors in X-1999 has an on-screen role in Saving Private Ryan.
Crazy to think about.
Yeah, wild to consider. And with this rotation, let me lay out the premise once more for new listeners. Put it on the list. One of us picks a movie to watch, we discuss it, and then the next movie from whoever's next in the rotation has to be connected by that previous one via cast or crew. Slight addendum to the rules. Last season, on Put It On The List, everyone had two wild cards. We don't have two wild cards anymore. Everyone only gets one.
But I only used one wild card because everybody else was using it.
We discussed this.
Don't I get like a perk or a bonus or something?
No.
Nope. Rollover minutes don't exist.
Yeah. No. Like, I will say here's a possible idea for us to, you know, talk shop on the podcast before talking about the movie. I love Ziggy in the webcam just craving those pets right now.
Aww. He's getting the big pets that make his brain weird.
Is he chirping over there too?
No, he's just like slurping his lips. He goes like,
oh, okay.
Moments like this make me sad that we're mainly an audio podcast.
Here's an idea I purport to you all. How about part of what decides the order of the movies for the next year, now that we only have one wild card each, is whoever uses wild cards first is last in the rotation. And thus, like, each person that uses one is put to the back of the line. So, you know, if I use my lifeline first, I'm automatically end of the rotation. And then if Bree used hers, then she would be third.
A little de-incentivization. I kind of like that.
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
Okay. Cool. There's the new rules. One wild card and the uses of our wild cards decide the order.
Also, didn't we mention that, like, the use of the wild card can only be done, like, once a cycle?
Well, yeah, that's... Oh, yeah. No. That part, I think that's a little bit too strict of a rule.
All right.
Only be once in a rotation.
Because I kind of liked that idea, but if we're not going to go with that, then we shan't announce it that
way. I know I purported that idea, and Evie, you weren't that big of a fan of it. Like, you feel like it kind of robs a little bit of the fun of the wild card in the first place.
Yeah, and also, like, it creates a situation where someone, like, if the first person uses the wild card, then, like, anyone behind them could get, like, stuck. Like, and avoiding that is the point of the wild cards in the first place.
Like, let's say Bridget used the wild card to go to things. I know you wouldn't do that, Bridget. Also, I think your mic might be muted. I don't think you would do that, but hypothetically, if you did, then the only play Evie would have would be whatever other movies the Things guy did, and that's a dire reality to live in.
If they did anything else.
I don't know if we'll have much in the way of small talk in the beginning here, because, like, catching up with people, because ultimately, we just did the year one finale last weekend.
No, yeah.
And I'm gonna be out of town next weekend, so I was just like, we gotta get this one done to stay on track. So, I don't know. Does anyone have anything they want to talk about from the last week?
I mean, I've been taking some time off of the streaming, focusing on artwork, got some commissions coming in. It's been kind of zen being able to sort of, like, at my own pace, kind of lean myself into my craft without feeling like, because I don't know, I've been getting burnt out on a lot of the live streaming and the VTubing. It's just then you gotta bring in energy that I haven't had for a bit, and I'm just like, time to reevaluate my energy. So you know what? I'm being mindful. I'm also going to the gym and getting insanely strong so that I can punch fascists. You know, yes. Just having a great time. But focusing on my well-being in general. How are y'all?
Yeah,
I've been playing a lot of Bravely Default over the past week.
How is that game? I feel like I've always heard it's like, it's fine, but there's not much beyond that.
I like the game part of it. But the problem is that for the most part...
I have a question for you, Evie.
Yeah, I was still talking, but sure. What's your question?
My question is murder.
I like that. I like the girl who goes murder. Like, because she's like a grumpy, like... She's like a highborn grumpy knight who turned traitor because the evil empire was doing the wrong thing and she couldn't stand it. Like, for the most part, the characters are like archetypes, but they're well-rendered archetypes. The one exception is the guy who's horny all the time and will not stop trying to, like, mac on the girls in the party. And just like, when that is like 1/4 of the characters that you're with the entire time, that wears on you.
How's it going, dudes?
That's understandable. Yeah. Evie, I think you'll be happy to hear I've begun a journey.
Yeah,
a journey to Rokinjima Island.
Yeah, let's go.
I started the other night reading through Umineko no Nakukoroni, Ryukishi O7's totemic visual novel series. I have not gotten very far in it because it is 100+ hours long. And
it is a dense tome, is my understanding.
I basically have just been, after I get off call with y'all at the end of the night, like, dedicating an hour or two to reading through some of it. So literally the last thing I did is I had like that first meeting between like all of Kinzo's,
all of the horrible, like, adults.
Yes, all of the horrible adults. I feel like it would take too much time in the beginning of this one to try and summarize what Umineko no Nakukoroni is about.
Well, it's about 8 days long, but
it is a murder mystery visual novel that is very much in the magical realist vein, quite literally magical through much of its runtime. And yeah, it's supposed to be very, very good. There have been parts of it that I've really liked. However, I am still running into the problem I had a little bit when I read Higurashi, which is Ryukishi O7, just, he's gotta learn to parse down his writing. Like, there's so much, like, there's just so much front loading. Like, the fact that you have, like, 3 or 4 different scenes of, like, Battler introducing, like, the family and their positions within the family before you get to, like, any of the dramas. Like, all right, man, I get it. I get that there's a hierarchy to this fucking family.
That reminds me, I have also actually been rewatching through The Simpsons, like, you know, one season at a time through, like, way legal means.
What is the connection in your head between Umineko and The Simpsons?
Just, you were talking about, like, going back and looking at things from, like, because, like, it's weird. Some things dated very interestingly.
As you go back into that, I have run into one transphobic joke. There's a lot of, like, please, my son can't be gay because it's the 90s, you know, but there have been some funny little political nods that are just like, oh, nothing has changed. Like, weirdly specific shit. It's just like...
One of my favorite visual gags is still, like, my favorite Simpsons visual gags is specifically, like, the Republican National Convention versus the Democratic.
Oh, yeah. Where the elephant stampedes through both of them.
Not so much part, but like the sign out front of like the Republic, or no, it's like they have like a little like poster strip above them speaking, and like the Republicans is like, we want to make life worse for everyone, and the Democrats is something like,
we don't know how to lead.
Don't know how to lead. It's just like, yeah, that hasn't changed. We're still there. But yeah, that's what I've been up to, is that.
After you've gotten, like, speaking of the Simpsons and Doom and Echo, after you get a little ways in, you should play the Simpsons, like, the Steamed Hams Umineko fan game.
It's so... I mean, I've watched Vinny Vinesauce play that. It's so good. It's just... I imagine it will hit harder the further I've gotten into it, though.
Probably.
But yeah, so haven't gotten far into it, but I am looking forward to it because I loved, despite its issues, I loved Higurashi and reading through that visual novel. So I'm definitely interested to see the emotional journey that Umineko takes me on over the course of it. Anyone else have other little things they want to talk about from the past week?
It's anime. It's happening here. All around us.
Are you going to run down every anime series you're watching? Wait, no, you did that during the year one finale.
I just want to update. I've been passively watching the ninja show where she's with an assassination lady who kills people and she turns the dead bodies into leaves. She tries to get a part-time job in which everybody tells her, just lie on your resume because it's all a lie.
Oh, that's what that screenshot was from. Okay.
And she ends up not liking a part-time job because it's way easier to make a ton of money off of killing somebody. So she does that for a little bit, and then she's just like, I'm just gonna, you know, help clean up my friend's murders. And they meet another ninja lady who's like the leader of the ninjas that defected. She basically conned everyone to do that. And she's a lesbian. And the reason why she left the ninja thing is to be with her significant other.
You know, I wonder how Dead Leaves aged. It's probably not very good anymore.
It didn't age well at the time! What are you talking about?
You gotta understand, I saw it when I was a teenager on, like, my older sister's PSP waiting for her to get out of a meeting.
Well, here's the thing, Bridget, I never watched Dead Leaves, and I remember listening to podcasts that did watch it and did not like it. There's still a weird, like, sect of people on the internet who like Dead Leaves, regardless of what the actual, like, objective quality of it is.
I just remember the guy with the drill dick.
Oh, the drill dick that actually shoots white fluid out of it? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know who that movie is by, right?
I did at the time, but I forgot who
it was.
It's
Imaishi.
Ah,
That's the first thing that the Kill la Kill Gurren Lagann guy did, was that.
From what I can remember of the direction, it kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
That's what I meant. I meant directing. Sorry.
Hey, sorry, nobody's license rescued Dead Leaves. I wonder why that is.
I don't know. It's very niche. It's a cult classic.
Panty stocking is probably the closest to,
and that's Bree likes panty and stocking a lot, so that's why
you say a lot. I don't know, every time I rewatch it I feel like it loses some magic, but I do still think it's a good anime. It's, you know,
for sure. I don't have much to say about it. Is that all you, is that everything you want to give us updates on in regards to anime?
I mean, yeah, basically we are both watching the Jam Girls and the new Gundam.
Yeah, the new Gundam is neat. The Rock Girls thing is funny at times.
He ate the Gundam fruit.
It's no Bocchi the Rock, but it's all right. It's very explicitly queer baiting, but that's okay.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
It's basically Rock Kakagogori.
I don't really want to watch.
It's metal. I think what you meant is it's metal. Yeah.
I've been learning as y'all have been watching things and I've been losing the interest in it. Like, I don't really want to see Aristocrat Bocchi. I think I have been so burnt out on, like, band animes that I'm like, I can't anymore.
Well, yeah. I mean, you didn't seem to even be in the other, like, you didn't seem to be into, what was the one we watched, Evie?
Girls Band Cry.
Yeah,
you showed me the first episode of that, and I feel like just, you know, and listen, this is just my opinion on like one episode that I saw. It felt very like contrived and very just like, I don't know. It was so plain and so boring and insisted upon itself. And I was like, I don't like this.
The show has the most dealing with just leaving school and not completing it because it's awful.
I mean, reliving trauma is not really Bree's favorite thing.
Mm-hmm. But she found it boring is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Also, just look how special we are. The power of music. It's like, yeah, okay, shut up. Fuck you.
Listen, I can get behind some, like, the power of music type thing. I like Sound of the Sky, and that's not a very good show.
Novel on PSP you can play. It's English translated.
I literally just told you I did not like the show that much, so I don't think I need to experience
the
it.
The narrative reeks of youthful ignorance, is the best way I can put it. That I just, like, it didn't catch me.
Sometimes that's what you need, but I understand if you didn't need
it. Yeah, the way it was done here just didn't really appeal to me. But anyway, we have icebreaker questions, baby!
We have an email from Owen.
Oh!
Here. No subject line.
Oh, nice. Good.
Thank you for the email, Owen.
Owen IRL.
Anyone else listening can email us at wifecitygaming@gmail.com. Or you could follow us at putitonthelist.bsky.social and send us questions there, too. Please, follow, like, comment, subscribe. We're available on all podcast networks, basically. I'm not sure if literally everyone. Anyways, Owen said, last time I compared Bree to Kobeni from Chainsaw Man, but her story of walking into the woods and 5 minutes later panicking that she was going to die of thirst and stuffing her face full of moss, bark, and grass while screaming for help is very Brianna wacky lesbian hour coded. If Bree interrupts, please explain that I am using exaggeration for comedic purposes.
I only ate leaves.
And then,
Bree licking the trees, sucking the sap out of them.
A mud puddle, I'm saved!
Owen also attaches to this, let me share my screen here, attaches a picture of a bird, a gif of Ernest doing weird faces, and a rotating pink cat.
And for the people at home, look up the weird faces Ernest gif, okay? Find that. Are you ready? Are you watching it? Okay.
Is that like a bird that's from Had a Full Boyfriend?
Maybe. It looks like it might be.
Also,
it has that preppy look about it.
He also attached an MP3 file of Simon and Garfunkel's classic song Bridge Over Troubled Water.
Which, for, you know, copyright purposes, we can't play, but it's, you know, it's there.
Okay, so that's Owen's email.
Nice.
And then we have a comment on YouTube, which you can find us on YouTube at Wife City Productions.
Hell yeah.
It's a comment from Radio Inactive 99 on our episode about Prey. They say, one thing y'all briefly touched on but didn't get enough praise was how the movie made it clear that despite us hearing it as English, the characters are actually speaking Comanche. If you'll allow me to rag on Marvel for a bit here, in the MCU, everyone in the universe speaks English. It doesn't matter if it is an alien from 1,000 light years away, or even a godlike entity from outside reality. All speak in English, even among themselves when no human is present. It is such a breath of fresh air that this movie doesn't do that. For me, the funniest kill was during the fight where the trappers try to ambush the Predator. The Predator is just calmly staring down the barrel of a gun, daring the guy to shoot, and when he does, the musket ball ricochets off the Predator's face mask and domes a colonizer instead. Genuinely comedic.
It is a beautiful kill, one.
Did you know that Trachtenberg is doing, like, some kind of, like, animated anthology thing for Predator, like, the Predator franchise now?
I didn't know that.
I hadn't heard about that. That's very exciting.
Yeah, like, I'm very interested to see what that is.
Yeah, and
it's just like a Saturday morning cartoon.
And I think I remember hearing that they eventually made, like, a full Comanche dub.
Oh, really?
Oh,
I remember correctly. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. It's a great movie. It was ranked right in the middle of our year one collective list. How did y'all like my surprise?
I really enjoyed it.
Of the math game at the end of us all ranking it.
That was very fun. I figured that's where we were headed.
Yeah. Because it will continue.
Yes.
Here's the funny thing is I don't think we have to. But especially reflecting on where all the movies from last season landed for us, I think we could have, not a full ranked list, but I think we could have done a collective, like, top 10 without too much struggle.
I feel like it takes less time.
He's shaking her head no.
There would be a lot of, like,
you forget
hurt
how
feelings
some...
and backing down and having to for the sake of time, and it would have taken longer than reading all our lists and doing the math.
Like, I think at least, like the top five we could have done. Because, like, if you consider how high we all collectively have, like, Collateral, Good Will Hunting,
Slam Dunk,
the first Slam Dunk, like, all those movies. Like, I feel like we could have done it.
The X argument would have been there.
Like, no, there's no way that X would have made it to the top 10. Like, that would have been an easy elimination.
Well, of course, but I'm saying, like,
you didn't get it to your top 10. You wavered on it, Bridget. I see you giving a questioning look on it. Anyways, we don't have to dwell on that. Thank you, Radio Inactive.
Thank you.
99 for the comment on that video.
I can't believe our podcast surfed Dracula, the titular list from Put It On The List. Just like, the podcast is called Put It On The List, but the list doesn't show up until the season finale.
It's about keeping people on the edge of their seat. Now they know that the list exists, so it's all about getting through each season so we can see where it gets put on the list.
But they already knew that the list exists because it's in the title of the podcast.
But they don't get to see. It's like Jaws. You don't see Jaws until the end of that movie.
The terminology of putting something on the list, the idea was, like, that's what you say about, like, these are films we need to get to.
Yeah, films, like, of all time.
Yeah, and so we get to it. However, there is now truly an objective one, and I think there's something magic about that. The old switcheroo.
Anyways, if no one has, we don't really have much in the way of other questions, so we can move on from there. Let's get started.
All right,
Bree. Because you were the one who put the Big Lebowski on the list, you are in charge of running down, like, a plot synopsis and stuff. But before we get to that, I want to know, Bree, what motivated you to put the Big Lebowski on the list, or on the wheel?
To be honest, you and I had seen it, like, a week prior again. For me, I guess it was, what, your first time seeing it?
It was my first time, like, seeing it fully all the way through. Like, The Big Lebowski is one of those movies that's always existed as, like, a thing I see, like, a chunk of in passing on, like, Comedy Central or something like that. But not a thing I've, like, sat down and watched front to back.
For
ever
sure.
Before.
So, like, for me, I've seen this at many different times in my life. I was shown this by a friend as a teenager. I watched it again as an adult, you know, in, like, my mid-20s, I think I've rewatched it. It's a fun little thing to go back to. You know, even just, like, rewatching it now, we've seen it now a couple of times in the past couple weeks, and yeah. I still enjoyed and laughed at it. I picked it because it is a cultural landmark that each time I watch it, I find something new to talk about. It is a thing that, it's a film that created sort of a religious movement called Dudism. It is a thing that has, like, very much touched a lot of people and a lot of people love as a cult classic. It's just one of those things that I feel like there's a lot to talk about. There are a lot of theories that people have on it. Most of them are bad. There's one that I mildly kind of get that I will talk about later.
Hold on. What do you mean theories?
Just film theories. Just like
what theory is there to have about the Big Lebowski?
It's okay, so here's one.
A film theory.
Also, I don't think the Big Lebowski is a cult classic. You can buy a Target shirts of it.
The Big Lebowski is, you know, I guess we could say, you know, the main, like, you know, the main character, Jeff Lebowski, people have said, like, he's Jesus. All of this shit is, like, happening to him. And, like, you know, he's taking on all of the brunt of humanity and shit. And, like, he's just, like, this chill guy. But the big one is, like, the cowboy is God. And I laughed at that. And I was like, it's kind of funny to think about.
That's...
But no, I picked it because it's a jolly romp. And
okay.
There's a big cultural... That's the reason that there are dumb theories about it, too, is because it had a major cultural impact.
Sure. Okay. Well, before we talk about everything surrounding The Big Lebowski, go ahead and give us a brief plot synopsis on what The Big Lebowski is for people who have somehow never heard of or seen The Big Lebowski.
So, basically, the way this movie works is because of someone misinterpreting this character's name with another person, they go after a couple of toughs go after the wrong person, our main character, and assume that he's the person who, like, owes money to them, that was apparently the daughter of this other person, this much well-to-do guy.
Not daughter. Wife.
Not daughter, sorry, wife, my bad.
bad thing to mix up.
No, yeah, I mean, you know. But yeah, so that's basically the thing. There's a mistaken identity with that, and he gets wrapped up in this whole...
They pissed, like, on his fucking rug.
They pissed on his fucking rug. The idea being, basically, you have a situation where there is a... what's the word I'm looking for here?
Mistaken identity?
No, stolen...
Oh, kidnapping?
Kidnapping. Why couldn't
kidnapping
I think that
with
word?
A ransom.
There's been a kidnapping.
Kidnapping with a ransom situation. Situation.
There's been a kidnapping. It's Rachel, the daughter of the president of Cercia. Get into the castle and rescue Rachel.
Number 10.
There's
10. Been a kidnapping.
Find Jeff Lebowski.
Get into the castle and find Jeff Lebowski.
But it is just about this guy and his friends trying to figure out this scenario. And it's... I don't really know how to make it brief. It's such a... That's basically the synopsis, though.
Well, yeah, it's a... It is a, like... It is a classic comedy of errors.
Yeah.
Like, in the way that only the Coen brothers could really, like, capture. Like, this is our first Coen brothers movie that we're talking about, and, like, it's, for me, it's a weird one because I feel like we can argue this is probably the most lighthearted Coen brothers movie they've
done. It kind of is, weirdly.
Like, it's between this and Raising Arizona.
For a movie where a gun comes out, I think, before the half-hour point, it's pretty good in that. And
what,
like,
what were you gonna say, Evie?
I think it's definitely the one that has, like, the broadest, like, cultural impact.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can agree with that. And, like, the Coen brothers, like, in terms of their writing and direction, are very much, like, a running theme in all of their things. It's kind of, like, the happenstance of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the way that everything that happens in life, like, they're very much the opposite of, like, life having, like, meaning and purpose. They are, like, they're actual nihilists and thinking, like, nothing means anything. Like, everything that happens just fucking happens. Yeah. And that's how the world is.
Not to be confused with the actual nihilist gang in the movie.
Yes. Not to be confused with the nihilists in The Big Lebowski, but, like,
Just be German.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They apparently were Kraftwerk at some point. Not so much by name, but by entirely the implication of the album they worked on.
But yeah, a lot of the Coen brothers centers around, like, just coincidence and happenstance being the thing that fuel the series of events that you sit down and watch.
And perhaps due to the relatability of that, I think that is part of just why they are such a funny, you know, filmmaking crew.
It's so interesting to consider because they're phenomenal directors.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, you see, I actually, while I was out in Las Vegas recently, I rewatched No Country for Old Men. And, like, you get to see, like, their craft, like, just exercised on this, like, really serious crime thriller. And then I turn around and watch The Big Lebowski, and it's still using those same techniques, but it's, like, for entirely different, like, purposes. Like,
yeah,
the way that you can, like, just sit in a scene. Like, one of my favorite, not to get too far ahead of things, but one of my favorite, funniest moments last night watching this movie was after, like, they fuck up the, like, money handoff, and, like, the phone is just ringing as he's sitting in the bowling alley. And the camera just fucking lingers on him alone in the frame as the phone keeps ringing, and it's just painstakingly slow in how it's, like, craning down to him. Like, it'd be something that, like, is for, like, tension or, like, really putting you in the mood of a scene, but instead it's just being used to, like, really draw out how funny this is.
Like, yeah, it's like God himself looking down on this burnout fuck up and being like, bro.
Yeah, what the fuck, man.
And
then, of course, later he's talking with the police and the phone is still ringing. Yeah.
Police are kind of messing about with his pipe and the weed.
Has his weed pipe out in front of the cops. Like, does not give a shit. What were you going to say, Bree?
I was just going to say, you kind of hit the nail on the head of one of the things that makes the Coen brothers so good that I never considered, is that a dumb comedy, like, whoa, crazy stuff happening movie really, really benefits humorously from being shot so well. And so, yeah, like, you know, like, when you shoot a movie with that intention of making something cinematic with, like, you know, actually giving craft to your film, it makes the dumb shit so much funnier.
Well, it's how you can tell that they themselves are, like, just very funny fucking writers and directors. Because even something like No Country for Old Men has those moments in it where, like, you can laugh at shit that's happening. Like, the scene with the store clerk Sugar talks to, like, has him, like, flip the coin. It's, like, incredibly tense. But, like, the guy ends up being okay at the end of it, and he, like, gives him the coin and, like, he's, like, urging him, no, don't put it in your fucking pocket. Don't do that. That coin traveled for 25 years. And, like, as he's walking away, he gives him this goofy fucking look. Like, just, like, I just espouse some, like, deep philosophical thing upon you. And the store clerk is just like, who the fuck is this crack that was in my store? But, yeah, like, ultimate point I was trying to make is that, like, it takes, like, a really funny person to understand how sometimes the funniest thing you can do is just sit in silence in a thing, like, not be reacting to anything, just let a thing sit.
Yeah.
And that can be hilarious.
Because, like, in a way, like, for the moment in the bowling alley, or just, like, there's not much you could do to make it more absurd, because, like, he's just sitting there and he's got his bathrobe on and he's got this fucking giant this giant portable phone sitting in his lap.
He's waiting for his turn to bowl, and he's just sitting there. Like,
all he can do is think about how this lady is probably dead.
Yeah.
Now, with the constant reminder of the phone ringing, just like, well, all right. Like, where do we even start with this movie? Like, this actually does feel like the most difficult movie that we have ever, like, talked about to talk about.
Yeah.
Because like, it's... Well, go ahead, Evie.
I think the thing about this movie is that, like, there's so much, like... Because the whole thing is, like, it's this one guy traveling through this, like, extremely convoluted plot that he gets, like, wrapped up in. It's a lot of noise, but no substance as far as, like, the plot goes. Like, ultimately, the stuff with the kidnapping and all that stuff, it doesn't fucking matter. And it's just an excuse to, like, follow this guy.
Yeah.
As he, like, gets bounced off of and bounces off of all of these other people.
As his face and his car are slowly obliterated over the film.
It's really funny. Evie, you said something in there that, like, helped, like, click a point into place for me of, like, it's all noise and no substance. Like, this is another Los Angeles movie that we are talking about here. And, like, that perfectly captures, like, the kind of city that LA is. And it kind of ties into a thing that I want to talk about with the movie, which is, like, it's a weirdly political movie, at least in the way that I view it, because, like, one, it's, like, immediately post-Reagan, in terms of its timeline, and, like, almost every single, like, person, or at least, like, group of people, like, represents, like, a different kind of, like, political mind in the United States. Like, you have the Big Lebowski, who's, like, the fucking, like, Trump type,
Captain,
like,
of industry.
Yeah, Trump captain of industry type person who, like, wants people to, like, pull themselves on the butt up by the bootstraps is like, no, you're just some fucking welfare queen who, like, doesn't give a shit about anything. Like, get a job, sir.
So, like, you've got, like, the Zen slackers. You've got
you have Zen slacker in the dude. You have the fucking military vet. And, like, in Walter, who's John Goodman in this movie, is
so good.
He is maybe one of the funniest characters of all time. But yeah, just this very, like, libertarian, like, don't tread on me, like, believing in my American rights and what I fought for in the war.
Bohemian artists, really, nihilists.
The nihilists. But then you have Donnie.
Donnie, who's just there.
He's like, just a guy.
Yeah.
He's just a fucking dude.
He's just a guy who couldn't find, like, other friends. So he's just, like, stuck here trying to...
And here's the thing. Here's my grand theory. And it's less a theory and more of a thematic idea. Because I'm not some fucking internet brained. Like,
oh, I don't believe theories. I just think they're funny.
Donnie is representative of, like, the average American who has to live amongst all these different ideologies and, like, warring factions in the world.
Yeah.
Where it's, like, all these people who, like, try to espouse that they believe in all these things, like, have these ideas that they stand by, and then the average American who's just gonna die of a fucking heart attack.
Yeah, because he's the one who dies.
Because they're so under stress from all this noise. Like, surrounding them. Like, that to me is, like, watching this movie for the first time was, like, the biggest thing that, like, really struck me. I was like, God, it's so fucking sad.
Yeah.
Like, he just dies of a heart attack. And that's
he dies.
It.
Yeah. No, and it's, like, instant cut to...
To them in, like, the fucking, like...
Mortuary.
Getting him cremated.
Where they're gonna charge a bunch of money to...
And they're just like, eh, it's not worth paying $180 to get a vase. Let's put him in a fucking coffee can.
Let's put him in a Folgers
can.
I guess to pull the veil back a little bit, recently, y'all, I'm okay. Aww. For any listeners that hear me say this. My dad died a couple weeks ago, and he is being cremated, and I will be spreading his ashes. Upon hearing that this was going to be what we did in service of the man, I could not help but think of this fucking scene.
How can you not? A little levity.
It's just like...
Where it's, they pour it out and it just like wafts right into his face.
Like, it's why when you spread ashes, ideally you are doing it in the middle of the fucking ocean. So you can, like, read the wind and make sure it's actually going into the ocean and not...
into someone's face.
Into someone's face. Back onto land. That's the other thing. None of those ashes make it into the sea. They are just considered either back in the dude's face or somewhere on the shoreline.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, dude.
Sorry, Donnie. You're stuck on the California coastline for the rest of existence.
But there's a little Donnie in all of us. Says, I'm Donnie. You're Donnie. We're all Donnie.
He tries to say a prayer and then starts making it about
Vietnam.
Okay, so here's the thing about, like, the dude and Walter are, like, they're people who... like, clearly went through the 60s. And, like, the dude is, like, he was involved with, like, the left during that time. He talks about being part of the Seattle 7 or whatever.
That's just to briefly interrupt you. That's one of my favorite things is him, like, smoking the joint in the bed with the daughter of Lebowski. And him just casually saying, you know, the Seattle 7? That was me.
And Lexico, like, and six other guys. Just like, her face during that scene is so funny because it's clearly just like, oh, this guy's such a fucking loser.
Yeah.
But he's good to brood with.
He's good to brood
to
with.
Breed with.
But like, he is someone who is like who was part of the organized left in the 1960s, and like that whole part of the political spectrum just collapses in the aftermath of that.
Yeah.
And like, this guy, he just ends up being a burnout. Like, he doesn't have anywhere to go to that. He is a roadie for Metallica for a while, but he just ends up floating along. But,
yeah, he just smokes weed and hangs out.
Yeah. Yeah. But, like, the interesting thing about, like, the way that the cowboy sort of looks at the dude, and he's just like, that's kind of great, though, right? It's great that this guy is just like he's just chilling. Like, he's just chilling, and he's like not being a huge asshole to everyone around him. Like, he's just the dude. He's out there abiding.
Yeah, just a pacifist out there, just existing and going with the flow.
And the thing about Walter is, like, he's a guy who clearly he went to Vietnam and he didn't completely make it back. Like, he's just stuck there. And it's like, he's a huge asshole, but
he's also weirdly trying to not be an asshole, though. Like,
yeah.
The scene initially after the dudes come and piss on Lebowski on the dude's carpet, and like Lebowski, like, or I keep calling him Lebowski, the dude uses a mildly racist term for an Asian American.
Yeah, that one was like, whoa.
Yeah,
that was a bit of a shock.
Walter, like, is going off, and then he's like, also, you can't say that word. That's an outdated phrase. They prefer this.
They prefer but Asian also, American.
And then he immediately says it again.
And then he says it, yeah. Also, is there a better, like, comedic duo to stick together than a pacifist and a veteran? I mean, come on.
Oh, no, yeah. I mean, it's perfect.
When did these two become friends? It's so funny.
I mean... just the fucking, the whole dynamic between those main three is so fucking funny.
Yeah.
Like, every single time they're getting into an argument and Donnie keeps trying to, like, butt in. Like, the scene where he keeps saying, I'm the walrus.
Yeah.
I'm the walrus.
Because he's not like, that Lenin. You're out of your Lenin for Lenin.
It's like...
It's so funny.
But, like, that also goes into, like, he tries to ask questions sometimes and get on a, like, wait, what's happening? You're it's too late. You're not in on this. Shut and it's just like, I just want to know what's happening.
Shut the fuck up, Donnie!
You're out of your element, Donnie. Yeah.
It's so good.
You can't just pop in the middle of a thing. Like, this has been going on for a long time.
And that's like a... And here is the problem that you end up running into when talking about this movie. Is like, you could just go on for hours about, like, all of the fucking funny bits that are in this movie. And so I want to return to the point that Bree, you were kind of talking about, and Bridget kind of pushed back a little bit on, which is, like, the Big Lebowski status as, like, a cult classic, which... I think the best way to address that is, like, in the immediate aftermath of that movie, like, probably from, like, when it came out to, like, I would say, like, later, like, maybe mid to late 2000s-ish, that's when it was existing, like, as a cult classic. And I feel like it had enough time over the years that it essentially, like, ran into the Monty Python and the Holy Grail problem, uh-huh. Where, like, it's a movie that existed so much as a cult classic that it just kind of cemented itself in as, like, one of the most iconic, like, comedy films of all time, and has now reached a point of, like, saturation where, like, don't get me wrong, I think this movie is fantastic, but, like, this is a quote machine of a movie, and it pulls what some would argue is, like, the worst parts of, like, movie fandom and shit out of people.
Like, yeah. I'm not saying every day you're gonna see this, but there's a good chance, like, if you walk around enough, you'll see somebody with a Dude Abide shirt.
And listen, as someone who was raised in Arizona initially, I met a lot of people who were supposedly dudists, and they are the worst fucking people you've ever met in your life, of course. You know... Well, I'm not done. But, like, the, but moving on, the, fuck, what the hell was my thought pattern going on here?
talking
you
about...
dudists, they were the worst people.
Yeah.
Yes.
But, like, talking about that sort of thing, the other thing about, like, the quote machine you mentioned, like, it kind of has what we were looking over with, like, the Princess Bride-ian sort of issue, where it's, like, in context, these quotes are so much more powerful than just recite them. Like, where they are... Just, it's so great. Like, the Jesus, the weird pedophile guy telling them, like, oh, I'm going to kick your asses, like, going off on them about the whole thing. And he's just sitting there like, oh, yeah, well, that's just, like, your opinion, yeah, man. Like, after this that, whole fucking
that is,
rant.
I think that line is, like, the, like, epitome of that in this movie. Where, like, you see that fucking gif used, like, everywhere, like, from workplaces to social media, all that shit. And, like, your mind doesn't, like, really track just how fucking funny that line is in the context of that film, because, like, him saying that is just so lackadaisical that it's so fucking good. It's just like, your opinion, man. Like, because, like, how do you respond to, like, someone like that? Like, someone who looks like the Jesus confronting you in that kind of way. You can only respond in that way, or you respond like Walter does, of, like, pulling a gun out, like he did with that other bowling team.
Well, I mean, the way that Walter responds in another way that he's diffused earlier is just turning to him and going, 8-year-olds, dude. Nothing you say can truly have any weight when you're just a fucking
when you're
pederast.
Yeah.
Like,
but, like, as far as, like, the moments that are, like, completely, like, removed from their context, it's like, it's that one, or it's, like, the gif of Walter being like, God damn it! Or, like, when they're in the when they're in like the
this is
the
what
mortuary.
Happens when you fuck a stranger in the ass.
There's that one.
The way that John Goodman is like pumping the crowbar as he says that is one of the funniest bits
that
of
whole
physical
scene is just incredible. Like
the way the kid's face just does not change.
Not even smiling out the window at their error, just looking
at it.
Just
looking out of it.
Is this your homework? Is this your homework?
We know that's his homework. Hold on, dude. Is this your homework?
All the while, he has that look on his face, and his dad is still in the background in an iron lung.
Yeah, it's just like
so good.
The movie has existed as just like Brie touched on like our discussion about the Princess Bride earlier, and like I was thinking the exact same thing, where this movie has existed as like a cultural object for so long, you sort of miss out on like the texture of it as a movie, and that's a shame because like it's a lot richer for it, because like it's just like the way this movie is just. It's wild how funny this movie is.
Yeah.
It's a thing that I think is going to end up being like a running theme throughout this podcast. Like as we keep going through it, is Ziggy like wilding out over there or something?
His tail is blacking the microphone.
Oh. But I think it's going to be a running theme because especially for someone like me who... This podcast was like a big motivator to like just start watching movies more. Like I was not much of a film enjoyer before this. So I've been watching a lot of the movies of all time. And like probably one of the best examples was like watching like The Sixth Sense with everyone here. And like that's another like perfect example of like a movie that has existed so long as cultural artifact that when I watched it finally, I was fucking pissed that like it had only existed as a cultural artifact because of how good that movie is. Where it's just like, wait, y'all are just like memeing about this movie for the last like 20 some odd years. What do you mean this is like phenomenal? It, like, actually genuinely kind of incenses me that so many great films can just be, like, parsed down to, like, just fetish objects for pop culture, effectively.
Yeah. Like, there's so much wild shit in a movie like The Fifth Element, but it gets boiled down to, like, multipass, and it's like, yeah, that's it.
No, that was the funny thing. When we watched that, I was like, man, that scene has no fucking power. Why was it given all this emphasis? I don't, like, this is what people took from this?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Like, it's, speaking of, kind of on the inverse of that, I meant to talk about this earlier, but I was watching a YouTube video before the recording today of, like, the top 100 songs on Rate Your Music, and at a certain point,
oh, good Lord.
It hit Duel of the Fates. And you want to talk about something that like no, it's good that that exists as purely like a cultural fetish object because like the Phantom Menace, not a great movie. Duel of the Fates though, Brie was like, I don't know that song is that good.
Well,
like,
here's the thing: I offered to hear it because like all I knew was just that motif being played at its height, like for the ads. I don't think I remembered any of the actual music from the film. And you played that for me, and I was like, no, yeah, this is some like Final Fantasy Last Boss music. This is some like, shit. What is this doing in like the most kids movie that like they made for the Star Wars franchise?
I would argue that Duel of the Fates is maybe the best thing John Williams has ever composed.
It might be.
Like, as someone who's not a big John Williams head, that fucking song rips ass.
Like, he do kind of be making the same fucking score sort of over and over again, but that really stood out. Like, listening to that, I'm like, no, this is good. This is good.
I will say that, like, I've watched The Phantom Menace within the last few years, but, like, the moment with where Duel of the Fates, you know, hops in, you know, the fight against, you know, Darth Maul, where Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan fight against him, or just like, I think like that's a great moment in like a movie that's maybe not very good. I think that moment itself is still worth like, and honestly, Duel of the Fates is why it's part of why it's so good. But like, you know, you got the performance from, I forgot the name of the guy who actually plays Darth Maul, but like he radiates menace really well, and like, you know, Liam Neeson's there, and like Hugh McGregor's there, and it's just like, it's, that scene is very well put together.
Yeah, like
he's the best part of that film.
I would argue, like, I as a child, Episode One was my first Star Wars movie that I ever saw.
Probably same.
I think that movie did a lot of heavy lifting, because I remember not having a bad opinion on like Phantom Menace as a child. I fell asleep in the theater. Well, both you and Bree.
No, I fell asleep during the second one.
Oh, episode two.
Well, the second episode's worse.
The second episode is just Space Congress. I was like, what the fuck is this?
I mean, the first one is also Space Congress. But
yeah, but like stuff happens in it.
Anyways, I think we have gotten
Star Wars digression done.
No, yeah.
Listen to a more civilized age for all your...
Oh, yeah, they need the advertisement on our podcast.
Yeah, they really need the rub.
I want to see the graph showing like fucking like the sales of costume contacts going up during like the following two decades because of
Darth Maul.
Yeah, Darth Maul was so cool as the only good thing in that film for me personally, that like it made so many people so perfectly want to go like, yeah, let's nail this.
He's
and then
so
you
cool
go to a sci-fi con and
dead.
You're like, there's the guy, there's one of the dudes, he bought the yellow contacts, he's doing it, he got the horn prosthetics,
y'all. It wasn't us getting through the first year that marks us as a true podcast now. It's us having our first major digression during a discussion.
We've had so many digressions. I don't know what we're talking about.
I feel like this is the first major one we've had while talking about the movie itself, not like in the beginning during.
But anyway. The other thing that I gotta say about, like, you know, about The Big Lebowski as a whole, yeah, I mean, and just because it is a Coen Brothers film, amazing, like, visual gags, amazing, like, setups and payoffs. Like, the one thing, because people keep breaking into the dude's house and fucking shit up, he just gets sick of it and he starts, like, boarding up a thing so that he can just nail a board to the floor and put a chair up against his door, which is immediately, the door opens the other way. So someone opens it up and comes in anyway. And then later, he comes back and trips over the board that he nailed to the floor. You get two payoffs.
It's like, so fucking funny.
It's amazing.
I mean, if we're talking about like little special things in it in terms of comedy, the noises that Jeff Bridges makes whenever he's like in a panic state in that film are so funny. The scene where they drop the marmot in the tub with him, or when he drops the joint in his crotch while he's driving, that weird like
turns into a chimp.
Yeah, they drop the ferret that makes pig sounds for some
marmot, please.
Well, the joke is that he doesn't know what a ferret is, so he says, "Oh, that's a marmot."
Yeah. Oh man!
He's just losing his shit after they drop it in the bathtub.
Wouldn't think they would just drop alive.
Yeah, what is that supposed to do exactly? They have a domesticated ferret, and they're just dropping it in.
He's panicking like they dropped a piranha in the tub.
It's
like
so
that's
good.
The thing that
it's flailing because it doesn't want to be in the water.
If somebody dropped a live animal that you are not used to, because some people are not used to being around a ferret, let alone a stranger's ferret that you just drop into a fucking
tub. That
you
think is a marmot.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess.
His house, his car, and his face take so much abuse over the entirety of this film.
Talking about setups and payoffs, the running fucking joke of, like, just how continuously more and more fucked up the car gets over the course of the movie. One of my favorite gags is when they try to do the money handoff and, like, Walter tries doing, like, the action maneuver of, like, tucking and rolling out of the car, and the fucking Uzi he's carrying, like, falling on the ground and opening fire.
Spinning around.
Spinning and shooting himself with it. It's so funny.
Taking out the rear lights of the car.
Like, it spins on the ground like Homer Simpson doing the whoop-whoop-whoop-whoop-whoop-whoop thing. It's just so good. Like, I mean, we could talk about, like, the performance, like, some of the physical performances. Like, Philip Seymour Hoffman is Brandt, like, Lebowski's assistant. Like, he's just so perfect. Like, it's a thing that when you watch the movie, like, a second time and you know that, like, everything is all... It's all meaningless and, like, yeah. Everyone is trying to play everyone in this scenario. And, like, it makes a lot more sense that Brandt is, like, so stilted. In every interaction.
Yeah. Hands something up. He just, like, stands
It's impossible to, like, do justice to the stance that Philip Seymour Hoffman does in the scene where he hands off, like, the ransom letter. Like, it's like an action figure that you, like, glued its joints in place.
Yeah. He has zero chill at all, like... When they're both in the car and the big Lebowski is talking, he's just like...
here's the funny thing is I would say Philip Seymour Hoffman has a shocking amount of chill, like, outside of those moments, though, because you have those scenes where it's, like, just him and the dude interacting, and he's just like, you know what it is, you know what it is, dude. Like, it's just so matter of fact,
dude. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, don't say that. Don't do that to me. Man. No, no. Listen, I was told to tell you this. Her life is in your hands, dude. Oh, no, man.
It's
come
such
on.
A
he's chill with the dude, but anybody above him basically is like
he emanates dudeness.
Yeah, because he's a kiss ass.
Yeah,
that's his whole thing.
He's the most, like, this is what Milhouse grows up to be adult, but, you know.
It's just a perfectly, like,
perform. Well, I guess really he's a Smithers, actually, so never mind.
Yeah, he's very much a Smithers.
Yeah.
It's a perfectly performed movie in terms of, like, all of the actors in it. Like, we've already talked about how John Goodman is, like, John Goodman's movie is, like, maybe, like, top 10, like, comedy performances of all time.
Yeah.
It's... so fucking funny. The scene where he pulls out the gun on the dude in the bowling alley is just unmatched.
Like, and it's great too because, like, when he first does that, you don't have any context if it's, like, actually loaded, but then he pulls it out, and then afterwards they take time to show him take out the clip.
Taking the clip.
Yes.
Yeah.
Unload the bullet that is definitely in the chamber. Like, he stepped
over the line. There are rules.
It's another, like, going back to this movie is like pop culture artifact, like, that, like, you're in a world of hurt thing. Like, everyone just thinks about, like, him screaming towards the end of it as he's holding the gun, but, like, they don't acknowledge, like, him first pulling out the gun and just very calmly being like, you're in for a world of hurt, mark it a zero.
Yep.
Mark it a zero. Like, it's just it's unrivaled. And also Jeff Bridges as the dude, like, the slower moments where he, like, the slower conversations with people are, like, part of what makes his performance so fucking funny. Like, one of my other favorite moments is him talking to, like, the police chief, and the dude is just fucking going off on him for, like, 5 fucking minutes about how he doesn't want him in this neighborhood. The Jackie Treehorn is, like, respected, and he, like, asks, like, dude, like, do you get what I'm saying? And cuts, you know, you get your shot, reverse shot back over to the dude who's sitting there just kind of looking mildly condescending. He's just like, I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention. It's just like, you...
And then he throws a mug at his face.
The impact of the mug is perfect.
Yeah.
But, like, the way that he... the way that he says, "I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention," it like blurs the line of like whether he's being a smartass or if he actually just wasn't paying attention in that scene. And it's what makes it.
This is also prior to a scene where he thinks he's being smart by like tracing what the King of Thorn or whatever is drawing.
Jackie Treehorn clearly writes something down.
It's just a man with an erection on like the doodle thing, but for some reason he takes it like it's some sort of
clue. Well, if he leaves it, it shows that he was trying to figure out what he was doing. So yeah, it's like, well, I can't just leave this.
That's
there.
The thing. He takes it because he's trying to take like destroy the evidence. Like, I don't think he thinks it's important. I think he's just like, oh shit, he can't see that I was doing this. So
it pops up again when the police chief is going through his, like, only form of identification being a Ralph's membership card and
that. Southern California excellence.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, Ralphs.
Another thing, like, just, you know, of course, again, like, John Goodman's character, like, his, like, absolute anal retentive, angry insistence upon just the dumbest selective things. And, like...
It's the Shazbot. Like, yeah.
No, I can't do this on the Sabbath.
Saturday.
Yeah, on the Sabbath.
Or Sabbath,
it?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it is Shabbat, I guess.
Yeah, Shabbat.
Yeah, like, I don't drive on this day, and the holiest of days. And it finally comes out after he's been harping on this for several scenes. You're not even Jewish, man. He's like, my wife was. I converted when I was with her. But you've got divorced 5 years ago. Oh, so I guess I just stopped being Jewish.
It's like, he's a guy that's just entrenched in the rules of society. And like
it's a law. You can look it up. I'm staying right here.
Yeah. I'm enjoying my coffee.
And then you have like Donnie, like we touched on Donnie already, but like, and him like butting in on conversations, but the way that like sometimes he'll just be sitting in silence, and like the way Steve Buscemi like physically plays it in the face, like you can see him like undulating between like just kind of being there and then like someone saying a thing that concerns him. Like, it's so perfectly played that he's like understandably like perplexed by whatever the fuck they're talking about, but also like concerned because it's still his friends at time. They're talking about like a lady getting kidnapped. It's just
He plays it like a child watching his parents fight, you know?
I'm trying to think of any other character in a movie who has, like, as few lines as Steve Buscemi does, but still has, like, a out-of-the-park performance like he does in that film. Like, it's kind of amazing. It is a credit to how good of an actor Steve Buscemi is.
It's wild to consider this because, like, this is the movie that, like, this is the movie that the Coen brothers made like right after Fargo, where Steve Buscemi just like talks nonstop in that movie. And it's like, it's just, Donnie's such a different character. And
he's like, I'm giving my throat a rest, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
We have the Dr. Moreau connection.
Yes.
David showing up as just like his little pervert freak.
Weird creep. Just a weird fucking creep of a character.
After coming out of the aisle of the Dr. Moreau, he's like, I'll do anything, please.
I want to talk about the Big Lebowski and just like, man, what a piece of shit. That guy sucks.
Oh, yeah.
I really liked the one scene where he's doing like his FDR like cosplay. He's just like, he's sitting in front of the fireplace. He's got like the little blanket over his lap. And he's just like, great men can cry too, dude. And it's like,
he's just like smoking a joint.
Yeah, him being like parallel to the dude in that scene who's just kind of like, this is a real bummer, man. And also all the while there's like opera playing in the background.
Ave Maria, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, and it's just like, he's a total fucking fraud. Like, absolute fraud.
As all those individual types of individuals tend to be.
Uh-huh.
Yep. But also, they pin him too much as a fraud, and Walter is like, I think this guy's a fake paraplegic. Let me
grab
him.
I've seen a lot of spinals in my day, and I've never been more sure of anything. This guy can walk.
And he lifts him out of the chair and throws him onto the ground. Just like cementing Walter as the worst character in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, so I've watched this movie two times in the last month and change. One time was stone cold sober, and my main takeaway from the movie was just how awful Walter is. Like, he's just the fucking worst.
He's an awful person.
Yeah.
He's an awful person, and the thing that makes him so awful is he's an awful, stupid person.
Yes.
Like, he is a grade A idiot who does not realize just how stupid they are. and the second time I watched this movie in its naturally intended habitat, I took a full edible before watching this last night.
You were flying.
I mean, my main takeaway was this was just how funny this fucking movie is.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the things that I was surprised by how much they killed me while high were the weird dream sequences that happen in this movie. Because I think you watch the movie sober, and those scenes are just kind of, like, weird, silly interstitials that, like, they're funny, but
yeah, they're fun,
but they don't do too much, but when you're high, those scenes feel like a million years long, and you're just like, what the fuck is going on? Why
this tiny dude just came into this like massive stone wall dancing around? Why is this bowling ball camera
flying over the city of Los Angeles while a lady's on a magic carpet in front of him? Like, it just every time one of those happened, it just It sent me over the moon, personally. It was a great way to enjoy the film.
It was already
a very funny movie, but it did make it funnier.
It can be enjoyed in many different ways, but that does help.
Yeah.
It's not necessary.
I don't know if I have too much else to say about it at this point.
Porn star Peter Stormare is very funny.
His awful mullet. Lord. His just absolutely dreadful mullet that he has is
a catastrophe.
The fact that when, like, the fight happens between them and the Nihilists at the end of the movie, he has, like, a fencing sword that he pulls out.
He has, like, a saber. Like, his... And then he immediately gets owned by Walter, just like chucking a fucking bowling ball at his friend, and Walter just eats his ear. Like, it's
and then spits it out.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah, knocks the guy's wind out with a bowling ball, rips the other guy's ear off with his teeth.
He probably did more than knock the wind out of Flea. He probably broke Flea's ribs.
Probably.
He threw a bowling ball at him, like, full force.
I'll say, not specific to this movie, but like the first thing that rewatching this really fucking hit me in the, like, not really nostalgia, but just like the oh yeah, that was a thing, was like those little like electronic red coupon dispensers that were in, like, you know, grocery
in
stores,
supermarkets.
Yeah, and I'm just like, oh fuck, that was a thing. What a waste of paper and electricity those were. What the fuck?
But all guess what? They still exist.
Yeah.
Do they?
Yeah.
I have not seen those in, at least 10 years.
Mm-hmm. It's probably more of a thing at, like, more major, like, grocery stores.
Maybe.
Yeah, because, like, I've seen them at, like, a Publix.
Oh, for sure. I don't know. I guess where I've been, they've been kind of phased out.
Yeah, I mean...
You have Publix, too?
Mm-hmm. We're in the same region of the country.
Yeah, you're both in the southeast. What are you talking about?
I remember the first time we had you out here, Bridget, and you were like, what's a Jack in the Box? And I'm like, it's acid reflux.
She saw a hill for the first time and was doing like the gif of the guy being like, what?
The ground goes up?
And then it goes back down?
Whoa!
Well, that's a Florida thing, because we have like flatlands here.
What's she pulling the camera?
It looks like that.
It's a blown out window.
Yeah.
Come on,
it looks like God is about to pick in and punch you in the stomach.
This is a great visual joke for our audio only podcast.
Doesn't work.
It looks like we can't see shit.
Yeah.
Does anyone have other specific things that they want to touch on in this movie? Because I feel like
Julianne Moore is great in this movie. as like Big Lebowski's daughter, who is just like a weird avant-garde artist.
Yeah, avant-garde feminist like artist.
No, she is great.
Vagina.
Yeah.
Happiness. Happiness. Vagina.
But it is it's a great one. I was just gonna say are moments where he's very much like what's his name from Trailer Park Boys, where it's just like he still has that glass with the drink on him from like her place to the car back into his home. Like he just always with a fucking white Russian in his hand in this case. And it's just like, goddamn.
I mean the
way... scene where he's like smoking a joint and drinking a beer while he's driving, just like getting crossfaded.
I mean, whenever he drinks the white Russian and gets like the liquid stuck in his shitty mustache,
he just sucks it out. Yeah, like,
when
lip.
You like first meet him, he like opens up a thing of milk and just like
in the grocery
it,
store,
in the grocery yeah, store, it, and then has it. The milk mustache.
Left. Also, it's half and half.
Oh yeah, it's not even milk; it's creamer.
He's just trying to find something that works. Yeah. He's like,
he's going to use the rest of it for, you know, white Russians, so I get it.
Oh, my God.
And yeah, it's... Man.
What were you going to say, Evie?
I like Maude, the Julianne Moore's character. Her... all of her weird art stuff juxtaposed against dude's landlord doing his, like, dance thing.
Yeah.
You want to talk about, like, a perfect, like, setup payoff thing. Like, he says that the landlord, like, asking him
I
to come
I just realized that's who the dancing guy was. I didn't...
That's, yeah, that's his landlord. Thing. That's the thing, is it plants it so early in the movie and comes back around to it so late that you forget about it. And it almost feels like you're in another dream sequence when that, like, dance sequence is happening. And you're kind of like... What the fuck is going on here? And then you, like, get a look at the guy, and you're like, oh, that's the fucking landlord! This is the thing that he invited him to!
It and that, I think is also like he's dressed for church.
Yeah, and I think that's a very LA, and also for me, like, when you know a lot of people who are trying to be artists and get somewhere, you have to go watch their shitty thing that they're bad at. I've known people like that.
At least he's trying.
He's trying, you know. But it's...
dude showed up.
He did.
Dude showed up, despite the dude definitely still not having paid his rent.
Yeah. Those three people and I think one other person in the entire audience of that.
And it's magical. It's a magical movie.
It is. If you haven't seen it, what are you doing listening to us spoil it? Go watch it. It's so, so good. But
I guess what are your final thoughts on... Unless anyone else can think of anything to... touch on in it, but I feel like we've kind of run out.
I saw, you know, just looking at the online data repository that the Coen brothers like took from like the works of Raymond, or like were inspired by the works of Raymond Chandler in writing this movie. So like stuff like the Maltese Falcon and like all the Sam Spade type stuff. And it's very funny to consider that when you think about like how much like the conspiracy detective stuff just like doesn't fucking matter at all. Like how it's just like
the fucking like noir detective who pops in like two thirds of the way into the movie, like a guy who's from an entirely different fucking movie. He's just like, I like the cut of your jib, kid. The stuff that you're doing there is amazing. And Lebowski is just like, who the fuck are you? Leave my lady friend alone.
And he's just like, he's
she's
trying
not my
to...
special lady, she's my lady friend. Man.
And he's like just trying to find Big Lebowski's wife, who like her parents like back on the farm like want her to come back. It's just like this other tangential part of the plot that doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, like the thing about her at the end of the day, like the fact nobody knows where she is, even though she is not in fact kidnapped, she just went on a fucking trip.
like, that's the thing. Like, literally at that point in the movie, I think you see, like, the noir detective shows up and it just, like, really cements into place, like, just how fucking meaningless all of the stuff with Bunny has been throughout the film. It's just like, oh, literally none of this mattered. Like, this is just, like, been a pointless farce of a bunch of conflicts here.
But yeah, I think I'm ready to give my general final view of this.
There's one more thing. Also, I like the consistent joke of basically everyone trying to pay him the same. It's like, oh, you get 10% of blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
$10,000.
Of like $10,000 are like some percentage of this money that doesn't exist.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
So yeah, my final thoughts on this. Of course, glad I picked it. We just watched it so recently enough, and I was like, these were all the things I wanted to discuss. I feel like there's so much to kind of... What?
No, it's fine. We're good.
Ziggy was starting to pass over Evie's keyboard.
There is just so much to pick apart about this film as we have. It's such a fun romp, and like as you kind of pointed out, like, you know, and that just being the Coen brothers way, the comedy of errors, the constant just chaos that unfolds. The fact that this poor guy, you know, the dude is just kind of the target for Murphy's Law. Just everything that can happen does, and it's all just so meaninglessly just, you know, insanely destructive. As I said, like, his apartment, his car, his face takes so much fucking abuse. You know, but like, you watch this continuously wear at him with so little point of where it was going. Like, there's just no point other than the chaos itself. It is so fucking funny. It's so competently shot and written. It's just every character, like, we love this in a film. Every character, like, is perfect for what they're playing. I get why it was the impact that it was, and as we've said, you know, it sucks that kind of all art and culture is stolen by, I know it's a big budget movie, but, you know, the general zeitgeist of, like, you know, pop culture as a whole commodifies the unnecessary sound bites outside of their intended purpose and place. It sucks that that's the case, but I think that it really holds its own this much later. It's such a freaking amazing thing that I highly recommend watching. I think if you need a chuckle, this one's for you. Okay. It's a wonderful film still.
My final thoughts is this has the only real way to watch or listen to Hotel California.
Yeah.
In it.
Probably the best thing to come of the unfortunate Jesus character.
Fucking phenomenal, like, Spanish cover of Hotel California. It's
pretty good.
Evie, what are your final thoughts?
The movie's fucking great. It hadn't occurred to me that this is actually the first Coen Brothers movie we've done for the podcast. Surely it will not be the last.
Oh, no. Yeah. No, there's a few.
But yeah, like, I think, Bree, you're right in that, like, you know, when art is a commodity, like, it's, and like, it hits in the way that this movie did, like, it's kind of inevitable that it's going to kind of be robbed of its meaning and kind of reduced to, like, sort of pop cultural artifact. But like, I think you know, another way to look at that is that, like, in order for it to hit like that, it had to be something that could, like, touch people. And it's a movie that touched people. And like, it's which is weird to consider because of how fucking absurd this movie is. But yeah, it's a fantastic film. I think people should watch it if they have.
Yeah. I think its relatability, as I said earlier, is kind of like that. That's the beauty of the Coen brothers sort of thing, is just like, because the comedy of errors of the universe just unfolding on people is such a relatable, like, because really there is no purpose behind any kind of suffering or problems. They just happen. And I think we can see ourselves in these characters in a beautiful way, and we can relate to them. You know, as you were saying, basically, as we were talking about, like, everyone's Donnie, like, everyone at the end of the day. But yeah, no, it's really, really nice. What say you, Bertie?
Yeah, as the person.
I don't imagine we're going to do this. We're going to do it anytime soon. But Fargo is also really great. You should also watch Fargo if you haven't seen it.
It's fucking fantastic. Bridget, as the person picking, starting us off proper in our cycle, give us your final thoughts and then take us into your next film.
I mean, this movie's great. It's kind of hard for me to talk about just because it is, you know, it's the dude.
Yeah, it's one of the films of all time.
Yeah.
Like
the fucking movies.
Yeah. It's one of the fucking movies.
It's truly one of the fucking movies.
It is, at least in our current times, a wildly popular, well-known movie. So well-known, it has multiple foreign dubs.
Uh-huh.
Even in the same language.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. We know where this is going.
That's so, right, everyone. We're well, going no, back.
What's your connection? Who is the actor here?
It's Issei Futamata.
Okay. Who plays
Donnie in the 2000s okay. dub.
Okay. Because
awesome. it had an original dub from the 90s. And then I guess when it was released on Blu-ray again, it had a different Japanese dub.
Gotcha. Okay. So Isao Futamoto, you said?
Futamata.
Futamata, sorry. Okay. And what do they play in the movie that you're going to be picking out?
They play Shinshi.
Shinshi?
Shinshi.
Shinshi.
Yes.
In
a movie that also has two English dubs, by the way.
Oh.
We're going back to anime, and...
Obviously.
This is probably going to be the most serious movie I pick, or at least... Because we are watching Pat Labor 2, the movie. A movie about terrorism.
Let's go! Let's fucking go, baby!
Interesting.
So, question for you in those regards. Do you feel like Pat Labor 2 needs much in the way of context of the rest of Pat Labor?
Other than there are giant robots that are cops.
Who are cops, okay. For sure. You feel like the characters, like, are well established in
that.
Yeah,
that's actually how I first watched Pat Labor, was that movie, not...
Okay. Tight.
Because... I mean, we'll get into it when it's the episode proper, but the original show is a comedy.
Yes. I'm not super familiar with Pat Labor, but I know that much, at the very least, is that it's a, like, cop comedy show.
That's right, everyone! We get to talk about the sarin gas attacks!
Alright, Bree, this is going to be your greatest challenge to date. Do not say anything incredibly incendiary during the episode where we talk about terrorism.
No promises. Think she can make
good night, everybody.
Yeah, no promises.
Wait, I have an idea. We do the podcast, and then you doing the editing just put a bleeping noise over every time I talk.
No, I specifically keep in, like, any instance of you saying, I think, and then yeah. The bleep happens. I think...
Bree, your final thoughts? Really, when you...
Oh, God.
Personally, right. Think the...
I'm excited.
Yeah.
That Pat Labor 2 is one that I've really wanted to watch for a while now, so I'm pretty hype about that. In that case, Bridget... Where can people find you on social media?
I can be found at twitch.tv/sasquatchless, streaming various things. Like, by the time you hear this, the 1996 is over in anime video games.
I mean, it's been over for nearly...
I mean, in our retrospective.
It's been over for nearly 30 decades. Or
30
on Blue Sky. I think my most recent art was the very good piece of art with me playing a video game and having a vibrator.
It is a really cute piece.
Bree, where can people find you?
I thought you were asking what I thought of that piece. It's nice.
You know what? I haven't been streaming lately. I'm taking kind of a break. So really right now, the best place to find me and find my artwork is over on vgen.co/asnesbo, A-S-N-E-S-B-O. You can hire me. You can look at my artwork. You need branding. You need a VTuber. You need stuff. I got you. I can draw your OC naked, whatever you need. But you can find me over there on some
can
of the
stuff
that I do.
Can you also draw them clothed?
Especially clothed.
Thank you. That sounds like a good deal.
No, yeah, I know it's rare, but you can. I specialize, in fact, in like really cool outfits and stuff. But I first learned to draw the human form, so I know how that would look in it.
Sorry, I've been distracted during all this, seeing Evie just poking Ziggy for like the last 2 minutes. It's poke, 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 poke. What about when you start streaming again? Where can people find you?
You can find me over at twitch.tv/easybreezytv. That's EAZYBREEZY TV.
Beautiful. Yes. Evie, can people find you anywhere?
No. Cool. Other than except occasionally guesting on Bridget's streams sometimes.
Gotcha. Similarly, you know, I am occasionally on Bridget's streams guesting sometimes. You can find me on social media. I'm not going to tell you where you can find me, but I will tell you where you can find the podcast. You can find the podcast at putitonthelist.bsky.social, Wife City Productions on YouTube, anywhere major podcasts are sold. Leave us a comment, like, comment, subscribe. Yada, yada, yada.
We share have an official website, too.
Share us with your friends. Our official website is putitonthelist.neocities.org. Somehow, I accidentally skipped over the Gundam episode when I was putting things on our website. So it just goes from episode 22 to episode 24. Oops. That's where you can find that. And now the podcast is over. Go home. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Second movie with Twin Towers.
Yay.
What we view's connected by cast or crew, deciding the next film. That's the gist. Put it on the list.
Okay, I'm back.
Welcome. Hooray. Back.
The fan is off. It's going to get very hot in here, but it should be fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to be a sweaty hog bod.
I'm all sweaty.
That's my secret, Jay.
Sweaty.
I'm always a sweaty hog bod.
Let me see if there's been any new emails. Okay, wait. It looks like we do have a new email from one Owen.
Yay.
Who else could it possibly be?
I'm sorry. It's called The Axis Adventures Truth Seeker Battle Against the Lies, which is a Christian game. A Christian RPG.
And it's an anime game?
No.
I figured that's why you were looking for it, because it's an anime game.
No, I'm looking for it because one Barley Bap posted this, and I was like, I need to play this. You should listen to this video I just posted.
I am looking into the weed problem. I will smoke all of the grass.
And Wayne Radio TV got the goggles I wanted, like, so bad since I was a kid, and I didn't even know you could still get them. I imagine he just, like, bought them from someone who had them, because I don't think they still make those ones that, like, wrap around the top of your head.
Mm-hmm.
But I gotta see what that bit is. It looks hilarious. I'll check that out later.
I mean, I think it was the 420 stream.
Oh, nice. Then I absolutely need it. Oh, sorry. Ah,
stuck on the wire.
Ah, no! Ah! Anyway.
Okay. I guess that's that. How do you like my fresh haircut, Bridget? As she simply smiles shyly.
Ask me.
How do you like my fresh haircut?
Resplendent.
Oh, that's lovely. Thank you.
As I take my thesaurus and just pop that back
I do
into my
not
pocket.
Know how to formally start this episode of the
hey,
podcast.
Hey, our tea's
so
ready!
Just kind of bullshitting. Woo! And I guess we still have the tea to wait on in the meantime.
No, it's done.
I think my recording starts with like a burp, so enjoy
that.
Oh,
good. Great. I'm looking forward to that.